I was a practicing clinician working in a home health agency model. I wasn't allowed to dose my patients as per best practice guidelines. So I said, there's gotta be a way to do this better.
My grandmother and my grandfather, I started seeing them going in and out of long-term care. It started personal, seeing the sick side of 80, and now it's been exciting to be part of Fox.
Light bulb moment.
Like, that's a complete game changer.
You can see what we can do as a practice and as treating clinicians to really make 80, 85 look so much different than it did back that long ago.
And boil it down into one saying, it's quite simply this. It's be stronger, live better longer.
Welcome to Fox Rehabilitation's Live Better Longer podcast, the podcast dedicated to clinicians who work with older adults. My name is Jim Shear, and today I am joined by Satvika Garg, Chief Scientific Officer of the American Occupational Therapy Foundation, and Joan Toglia, OT expert on functional cognition. And there's more to your title, too. And I said, you know what, Joan, why don't you just handle the title when we go live?
Sure. Hi, everyone. I'm recently retired from my role in academia, but my title, I guess, is Professor and Dean Emerita of the School of Health and Natural Sciences at Mercy University. And I'm also an adjunct clinical professor of cognitive science and rehabilitation at Weill Cornell Medical Center.
But I love the one that I gave you, OT expert on functional cognition.
That's a lot shorter.
And I feel like if we were at an OT convention, that would get you a free meal anywhere you went.
Thank you.
All right, so let's dive into it. Satvika, can you tell us about the work that is done by the American Occupational Therapy Foundation?
Yes, absolutely. Thanks for the opportunity. So let me start with a little bit of background for those who don't know the foundation. The American Occupational Therapy Foundation is a 501c3 charitable, scientific, and educational organization founded in 1965. And its mission is to advance the science of occupational therapy to support people's full participation in meaningful activities. Now, to answer your question about what AOTF does, AOTF advances the science of occupational therapy by funding OT research and research-related events and programs, by also identifying future scientists in the field of OT, by offering scholarships and fellowship opportunities for occupational therapists at all degree levels. And through publications such as AOTF's quarterly journal, OTJR, Occupational Therapy Journal of Research. At this point, I also want to note something that might be important for a lot of your listeners, is that AOTF provides support to OTs throughout their career. We support future scientists. We provide over 50 scholarship opportunities, including the 26 state association scholarships for OTA, OTM, and OTD students. We offer STRIDE OT Research Fund for OT graduates and clinicians from underrepresented backgrounds with disabilities and or from under-resourced background. We provide 3 scholarship opportunities for OT doctoral candidates, 2 fellowships for postdoctoral candidates, and 3 early career research grants.
Thank you and good night.
I wanted to make sure I cover everything.
No, this is a great episode for Occupational Therapy Month.
Yes, and it's, we offer so much funding and we want occupational therapists to take advantage of it. I want to make sure that all occupational therapists know that there is an organization that's working just to fund their research, which is what we need in our field. So I want to make sure they're aware of all these opportunities.
So, Satvika, we'll get into the research portion in a bit, but can you tell us about how AOTF increases public understanding about everyday activities and how it's related to health?
Yes, the foundation actually makes sure that all of its initiatives and programs increase or contribute towards the public understanding of occupations and health. I'll give you a few examples based on what the foundation is doing currently. So first and foremost, it funds research that seeks to understand the preventative and protective function of daily activities in promoting and maintaining health. So all of the research that we are funding at this point, we make sure that it addresses the research priorities that we have currently on our website. And later in the podcast, I'll mention a little bit more about what these research priorities are and how they are generated. But just to move on, once this research is done, AOTF also provides a platform in the form of its journal, the OTJR, to researchers to disseminate the results of their work to be consumed by public. Furthermore, AOTF collaborates with AOTA for joint initiatives at AOTA Annual Conference, including the State of the Science Symposium, Breakfast with the Scholar, and the Research Excellence Symposium. So the research reaches OTs and other community partners outside of the research world. And on top of that, AOTF organizes special events like the upcoming Community Engagement Conference and several webinars to educate not only those within the OT research community, but also those outside of the community.
And Sattvika, how closely do you work with the AOTA?
Very closely. So a lot of the times, people get confused. Occupational therapists themselves get confused about the roles of AOTA and AOTF. I do want to mention that these are separate entities who work collaboratively. So I'm an OT myself, and for the longest time when I was a student, I didn't know the difference. And so I do want to say they're separate entities, but they work together for a lot of the initiatives. So AOTA works closely with AOTA to support a variety of programs, as I mentioned, at the AOTA Annual Conference. These programs are designed to advance research, education, and leadership in occupational therapy. AOTF is also an extremely valuable partner in our work to fund the Intervention Research Grant. So that's one of our early career research grants. It's one of the few opportunities occupational therapy scientists have to obtain early stage research funding. And AOTA is our big collaborator. For over 10 years, AOTA has been one of our biggest supporters of this work, and this program has been one of the most successful efforts to build new evidence.
What you're saying is, Sattvika, if there was an OT softball league, AOTA would have a team and AOTF would also have a team.
Well, you can say that they are different teams, but they're working towards the same goal. I want to make that clear because sometimes you might view it as, you know, two teams being competitive. It's not that case here. I think we are collaboratively working to reach one goal or to win the same prize, which is to progress the field of OT. So I want to make that clear for everybody. A big thing that we do every year, AOT and AOTF, we are present at each other's board meetings to learn about the work that's been done, provide input on things, and find more and more opportunities to collaborate. So we are working together. We are working together towards a common goal.
Yeah, I like that. All right. So, Joan, I told you before the podcast, I have no clinical experience. And that's no secret to the listeners of this podcast. Although I have been working in healthcare for 3 years, so I have learned a lot over the 3 years. But I always like to start at a 101 level. Mm-hmm. So functional cognition. What does that mean to you? Can you break that down? I know what it is, but I want to hear it from your lips because you can probably break it down better than I can.
So functional cognition is really, it's really described as the ability to integrate cognitive skills into the completion of everyday tasks. And so it's really the totality of performance because it's the integration of many different skills, attention, memory, organization, all of those thinking skills, but it's with performance. So occupational therapists are concerned about doing. So it's integrating those cognitive skills. And in everyday task, we're also using motor skills. We have the environment. We have the context. There's many other things happening at once. So it's really looking and thinking about cognition within that context of everyday, of sort of everyday life and everyday skills. And, you know, you think about even something like going to the supermarket. There are so many things that are happening all at the same time. It's not just one thing. You have to plan. You're having to scan the environment. You're having to screen out sound. You're walking. You're thinking. You're doing all these things at once. And so that's what functional cognition is about. It's that simultaneous integration of doing sort of those everyday tasks. And when we think about functional cognition, we're talking about sort of those everyday tasks that have that cognitive component.
Isn't it wild that everyone uses functional cognition, but if you pulled someone random off the street and said, hey, what is functional cognition? They might say, I don't know. And knowing that I was going to have you two on the podcast this week, I went on a date with my wife last week. She had off from school, so it was an afternoon date. And we went to a movie, and it's a movie theater that I don't go to often. And I was in the basement. And after I got out of the bathroom, I had no idea where I was. I'm like, where do I turn? It's like dark here. I said, wait a second, this is functional cognition. Like, I'm using that to get upstairs to my wife to see the movie.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
We had one of our Fox clinicians asking to hear your perspective on the importance of research and how it drives clinical practice.
Research clinically is so important in so many different ways. It drives the development, first of all, of our assessment tools, our clinical assessment tools. It adds meaning, value, and confidence to the interpretation of our observations and assessment when we have psychometric data and research behind our tools. And I can give an example of that, where there was a need clinically to have more assessments that assess functional cognition at a higher level, because we had most of our functional assessments were looking at more routine, basic self-care activities. And we needed something higher level. So I developed a task, but we had no normative data. We used it informally and got a lot of information with clients. It involved putting appointments into a calendar according to criteria. And we got a lot of information, but without research, it was meaningless. Without any normative data or reliability or validity, it didn't mean anything. And so we did the research, we got normative data, it was then published, and it's now a tool that can be used in clinical practice that can pick up problems that were previously missed in clinical practice. So that's one example in the area of assessment. But in the area of treatment, it's really important because intervention research on treatment leads to the adoption of treatment methods that are effective. And in treatment, clinical practice guidelines are based on research. So, for example, the clinical practice guidelines developed by AOTA, by other professional associations, or even written in journal articles, they're based on systematic reviews of research. And so basically, a clinical practice guideline, which represents best practices, is based on the synthesis of research articles. And what's really important about that, I mean, there's many things that are critical, but one is that those clinical practice guidelines become best practices, and they serve as a reference for third-party payers and decisions about reimbursement as well. So it's not just one study. It's the accumulation of evidence and of research that gets synthesized into the recommendations for clinical practice. And that's really important. And AOTA has some wonderful resources for clinicians, brief systematic reviews, and many clinical practice guidelines that have synthesized the research and provide evidence. And so that provides a lot more confidence to, of course, our clients,
yes,
to third-party payers, when you have that kind of evidence behind you. So
it all starts from the research.
Yeah. Well, yes and no, because sometimes I say yes, but very often in clinical practice, it's the needs, it's the questions, the priorities that come out of clinical practice that then sort of drive the research. It's like it's an interrelationship, really, between the two. But research sort of puts that ammunition behind the things in clinical practice that are effective, that are efficient, and important in getting quality outcomes.
Yeah, Sattvika, with so many topics out there, how does the AOTF decide which topics to research?
That's a great question, actually. I do want to start with clarifying that AOTF actually does not do the research. It funds and supports OT research. So the research that we fund is actually guided by the research priorities. So all of the initiatives, including our grants, scholarships, and other funds, and the other programs that we have here at AOTF, are all guided by the research priorities. These research initiatives that are guided by the research priorities then support the foundation's vision of having, you know, a vibrant science that builds knowledge to support effective and evidence-based occupational therapy practice, as Joan just mentioned. So you'll ask me, so do three people at AOTF just sit down and come up with these research priorities? No, it's from, as Joan mentioned, comes from everyday practice. Clinical concerns, issues, questions are what drive these research priorities based on which AOTF funds the research. And then this research, we want it to go back into the everyday practice so that the practice becomes more effective, efficient, impactful. So just to give you a little bit of perspective, our AOTF's current research priorities for 2022 to 2025, these priorities emerged from a year-long process, which included a comprehensive environmental scan. We looked at the strategic plans for federal agencies and major foundations. We also had a survey from OT stakeholders or community partners, including not only the researchers, but also the clinicians. Then there were also focus groups with OT researchers. This data from this environmental scan was reviewed by the AOTF Scientific Advisory Council and the board, and input was obtained from AOTF's key stakeholder groups or community partners prior to development and revisions of the final priorities. So all these research priorities based on which the research is being done is coming from the community for the community.
It's thorough. Mm-hmm. It's not like you're picking out of a hat. It's based on need, which is great.
That is correct.
So we also had some Fox clinicians asking about functional cognition. I think a lot of them are jealous that they're not on this podcast. They're like, why is Jim hosting? I should be the one hosting. But they're asking about functional cognition. Is there any new research in this area that we should be aware of?
So there's a lot of research in functional cognition right now. But I guess one area, there's a lot of studies that are demonstrating the importance of functional cognitive measures, and that are showing that functional cognitive measures can pick up mild cognitive difficulties even better than standardized cognitive tests or neuropsychological measures. And this is true across different measures. In my own research, for example, many therapists use the Montreal Cognitive Assessment. It's a screening, a routine cognitive screen. But we found that that assessment missed up to one third of people with subtle cognitive difficulties after a stroke. And we couldn't actually predict functional cognitive difficulties with people who scored relatively well on that assessment. And that's really important because studies are showing that even those with mild functional cognitive difficulties can have more difficulty managing medications, may be more vulnerable to poor health outcomes, to hospital readmissions, and have reduced quality of life. So it makes it really important to screen for functional cognitive difficulties. And this is true across many different conditions, including people with prolonged intensive care unit stays, people recovering from infectious diseases or cardiac surgery or other chronic conditions. You know, so taking care of your own health involves functional cognition, being able to plan, schedule appointments, all those. And these kinds of subtle skills can be missed by a standardized test because a standardized test is looking at individual skills, where again, functional cognition is looking at performance, the integration of many skills together. And so there is some research on a quick functional cognitive screening tool that is very promising by my colleagues, Gordon Giles and Dorothy Edwards, and they're doing research on a menu task that's now available in the Rehab Measures database. And so they're currently doing research on that tool. There are many other tools that therapists are doing research on. And a recent study by one of my colleagues, Carolyn Baum, she found that a functional cognitive measure, when compared with a neuropsychological battery, came out as a separate factor. In other words, it demonstrated just what we've seen in other studies, that functional cognitive performance measures provide unique information about everyday functioning, something that's different than a standardized test. So although they overlap, they don't replace each other. A functional performance-based assessment can provide some really important and unique information, and the research is showing that. So that's one area of research. There is other areas of research in intervention. We're seeing increased evidence on metacognitive strategy methods across different populations. And metacognitive strategy methods in cognition, it's helping someone really understand sort of their strengths and limitations within the context of activities. It's helping them monitor their performance and helping them recognize when things are maybe not going so well, and helping to empower them to come up with their own solutions. That's a bit of a shift in practice, because very often practice can be very directly teaching and telling someone what to do and pointing out the errors, and this is different. And so for an example, and this was actually an example with AOTF studied, actually funded a pilot study with my colleague Aaron Foster many years ago, and that pilot study tested this intervention with people with Parkinson's disease without dementia, but who were experiencing subjective cognitive difficulties. So they were noticing cognitive changes. And so the AOTF-funded study helped us sort of pilot that intervention and develop procedures to test its feasibility and develop a protocol. The study, after we did the pilot study funded by AOTF, we then were able to apply for a larger grant from NIH, a randomized controlled study. And we've just completed that. And we're seeing that these methods make a difference. We had two groups. One, they both had the same functional activities, but one group had usual OT methods, and the other group had methods that involved more guided questions, more helping to facilitate thinking and empowering the person to come up with their own strategies. And our preliminary evidence is quite promising. It shows really a significant difference between the two groups. And so this is something, and we see this also in the literature and other populations. So this is emerging, you know, this is emerging evidence or emerging research. But this, we're very excited. And again, it all started with AOTF, because we were only able to get that larger grant with that first pilot grant. So that's one example. And then another area of emerging evidence is a move to prevention and health promotion in cognition as well, to prevent cognitive decline. And there's many studies emerging on sort of multifactorial, or what we call multi-domain programs. They're almost holistic programs to optimize or maximize cognitive health early, at the first signs of difficulties, or for people that might be at risk. And so this is true in a lot of different situations, but particularly, of course, for older adults who are concerned about their cognitive difficulties or are subjectively feeling differences. And so a multifactorial program is physical exercise, it's cognitive strategies, it's health and wellness, it's diet and nutrition, it's many different things to sort of optimize the brain and the body together. And so there is some really emerging evidence. And so that's in mild cognitive impairment, but this is also extending to other areas, including optimizing cognitive function prior to surgery for older adults. So there's some emerging studies showing, and it's called preoperative cognitive optimization. So to try to reduce cognitive problems after that could occur after surgery. So this whole idea of prevention, early prevention, and in a way, what we were doing with the Parkinson's study was also a very early intervention. These were people with subjective concerns. This idea of intervening early is an emerging area of research to try to prevent, delay, any kind of decline.
If you were holding a microphone right now, you could just drop it. No, I love that. And it's crazy whenever, I probably sound like a broken record on this podcast, but everything always boils down to good health. Like, yeah. If yes. You're healthy, you live better longer, hence the name of this podcast. Mm-hmm. And I love too that you said that it's best for a patient if everyone is treated like an individual. It's mm-hmm. You don't go through a checklist. It's like, hey, everyone's a little bit different. Mm-hmm. And if you understand that, it's better for the patient.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Wow. That was great. You blew my mind. And the fact that you can catch it early.
Yeah.
And then thinking about it pre-surgery.
Yeah.
Hey, have you two met prior to this podcast?
We have.
Oh, you have. All right. Because I was going to say, you two should go out on tour. Like do an occupational therapy tour. Across the country.
I'm an occupational therapist myself, but it's so fascinating to hear Joan because my focus is pediatrics and I don't do a lot of functional cognition. So just hearing this is fascinating for me as well.
So I have a couple more questions because I want to respect your time. On this podcast, because, well, Fox Rehabilitation, we have speech therapy, occupational therapy, and physical therapy. Mm-hmm. And I always, maybe it's wrong of me, try to create a friendly rivalry with all the disciplines. But it is OT month, and OT leads the way for evaluating functional cognition, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And you need functional cognition to operate in this world, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
So ROT's the best?
Yes, of course.
Of course. There's no doubt about it. Why was that even a question?
So, last question. Since it is OT month, what will you two be doing to celebrate?
Joe, something before I go?
I was going to say, I'm going to be in Australia with OT colleagues, actually.
On work or pleasure, or a little bit of both?
Is a little of both. I'm actually going to be teaching in Australia and meetings and discussing research collaborations with OTs in Australia. And then it will be a little leisure as well.
Nice. Well, I feel like all clinicians, whenever they have some type of break or celebration, their first answer is, I'm working, and then I'll have a little bit of fun.
Exactly.
And then, Sattvika, what will you be doing to celebrate OT month?
We at AOTO get really excited for OT month.
As you should.
We have several things that we want to do this OT month. So we are recognizing and supporting the efforts of our 142 Pi Theta Epsilon chapters. PTE, or Pi Theta Epsilon, is a specialized honor society for occupational therapy students and alumni whose mission is to promote research and scholarships among occupational therapy students. We are also, in addition to that, we're working on making our OT community aware of two new funding opportunities coming up this summer. So the first one is Dr. Jean Ayer's Occupational Therapy Doctoral Research Scholarship. And as the name suggests, and most of the OTs will recognize the name, it is created in recognition of Dr. Ayer's contributions to the field of occupational therapy and child development. The scholarship of $5,000 will support an emerging OT scientist conducting research in the area of sensory integration and processing. The second one is the Carolyn Baum Occupational Therapy and Functional Cognition Award. This award will be given annually to an outstanding OT researcher who has contributed to advancing knowledge in the field of OT and functional cognition. Included with this award will be a stipend of $10,000. This $10,000 will be used by the winner to support one of their research mentees. I would also like to mention at this point that every aspect of our mission is only made possible through the philanthropic support of our donors. Fox Rehab has been a donor to AOTF for many years now, and we are so grateful for their support. If any of the listeners, your listeners, share our belief in the value of evidence-based practice.
Yeah, shout it out. Where can people donate? Let us know.
Yes, and you see the need for more OT research? You should consider a philanthropic gift to AOTF, and you can find more details on our website, www.aotf.org.
See that, Joan? I asked Satvika, what is she doing for OT month? And she was just shouting out goals for the AOTF. She is committed, and I love it.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you for the time today. I appreciate it. And have a fantastic OT month.
Thank you, Jim.
Yes.
Thank you.
So for Satvika Garg and Joan Toglia, my name is Jim Shear, and we will see yins later.